There's a little boy that wants to shine my feet. And it's 3 days ride from Bakersfield, and I don't know why I came. I guess
welcome
I came
back.
To keep from
You're
the
listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. So News Talk, WLOB, 1310 a.m. and 100.5. Any Deadhead, Grateful Dead fans out there will recognize the song Mexicali Blues. Theme music for our first guest today. Welcome, Topher Mallory.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Topher is CEO of Mexicali Blues, which is a well-known retail specialty store here in Maine, also online. And most recently, the owner and co-founder of Split Rock Distilling. So I want to cover all those things. And I have to say, at the onset, in the spirit of disclosure, for many years I've been wanting to meet you because I have two daughters who have who go to Mexicali Blues all the time. So I feel like I've helped really fund your operation for many, many years. And whenever we're in the old port or we're traveling around at one of your locations, my daughter will go, I've got to go see what's new over at Mexicali Blues. Can I have some money? And I'm like, well, where is this going? And then it's like, as I've researched the chain, it's like, it's going to Topher Mallory. And what's going on? But you have great operations, so I want to cover that. But before we do, let's go and talk a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, and then ultimately what brought you here to Maine. And then we'll talk about the two different businesses you're involved in.
Sounds good. And thanks for the great intro music. As I was listening to some of your past shows, I thought, would it be lame to send in a request?
Well, never.
People, I didn't have to. You guys picked the perfect song.
Sometimes people come with their own theme music. It's like part of their package.
And thank you for your support. Your daughters support a lot more than myself, as well as Pete and Kim Erskine, who own Mexicali Blues. They're supporting a 100-some-odd main employees now and people that make that exceptional experience possible. So thank
Super.
You.
So let's talk about how you ended up here. Where did you grow up and where you went to school? And we'll talk about the businesses.
Sure. I grew up in the Worcester area, Northborough, Massachusetts, and I went to UNH.
Listening to WAAF rock?
Yes, of course, 107.3.
God, I grew up outside of Boston, a little suburb, Needham, kind of a western suburb.
Absolutely.
And, the radio wars of WAAF, they were out in Worcester, but they liked to call themselves a Boston rock station because their signal kind of came right to the edge. But, they were kind of a Worcester station. Am I saying it right? Worcester? God, my Boston accent is so, denigrated after 40 years. How do you say Worcester? Do I say it right? You just kind of plow through, right?
Absolutely.
Worcester, W-O-O-S-T. So you went to UNH?
I did.
And did you study retail or study business? And I want to talk about also surfing, because I saw in your background that very few people in Western Mass that go to school in New Hampshire, have an interest in surfing.
Yeah, well, New Hampshire's got 13 miles of some of the most vibrant and fun coastline, and it's rocky and it's great beach and point breaks. Water's a little cold, keeps the crowds down, and makes for a great surfing experience.
I can tell you, last weekend, my wife and I took our boat down to Nantucket, and as we went, from Maine to Nantucket, you can't miss New Hampshire. There are waves. We were 20 miles off the shore, but boating on the ocean is interesting, and it was our first trip taking our boat out on the ocean. Typically, we're in Casco Bay. So by the time we got to New Hampshire, it was like, what's up with these waves in New Hampshire?
Well, there you go. It has a nice bit of eastern and southern exposure.
Sure.
And most of those waves come during the fall season. So as the water temperatures drop, the hurricane season turns up the volume on those waves, and the crowds thin out, which makes for a really nice place to surf.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So talk about kind of your progression involving business and then coming up here to Maine.
Sure. So at UNH, I studied business, finance specifically. I also got an art degree, and those two have been a big part of my career. I started in finance, worked at a number of different companies within hedge as well as analytical capacities, and always in the back of my head had that entrepreneurial bug and wanted to do something on my own. I also enjoy travel, as does my wife, Kristen. And as we traveled around and lived in different areas, we always found ourselves yearning to live where we spent our 2 weeks each year, which was Maine.
What part of Maine did you typically go to when you came up here?
Damariscotta area. My folks have a cottage there, and we've spent more than one summer romanticizing the idea of living here. So 12 years ago, 12 years this November, not that I'm keeping track,
right?
We decided we'd make a go of it, and it stuck and was just the perfect fit for us.
So the juxtaposition is, I was looking at your bio before you came in, we have Topher Mallory here. He's the CEO of Mexicali Blues and also co-founder of Split Rock Distilling. Something did jump out, your business background, your finance background. In 2001, for a few years, you worked at Prime, Buchholz & Associates. And not that hedge fund or the financial markets are necessarily evil, but they're kind of portrayed not as being evil, but they're kind of the pointed tip of capitalism and making money. And after that, working as a surfboard shaper, and then part of your philosophy with Mexicali Blues is to constantly do good. So it was the juxtaposition of being, whether you were on Wall Street literally or not, being kind of in Wall Street finance and then walking away from that. And is that just a coincidence, or was it something where that type of business just didn't resonate with your personality and you wanted to do good?
Well, that's a loaded question.
There's some existential stuff buried deep inside that. So, you know, there's some philosophy. I just thought it was a positive thing.
Well, at Prime Buchholz & Associates, I really got to try on a lot of hats within the financial workplace. It was an exceptional company, a consulting firm. And I saw the inner workings of finance, and they certainly inspired a lot of my own personal philosophies. But they also gave me an unbelievable tool set for the entrepreneurial marketplace. And in hedge specifically, you're either betting for or against, and you're doing it in an all-in kind of way. And I think entrepreneurial activities or businesses are the same way. You need to be all in on it, and you need to understand, you know, when you've made a mistake and how to learn from it. And I think that's something I picked up from finance, was how to look for those markers, how to set them appropriately, and how to capitalize on something that's going really well, and also how to learn from something that's not. So within specifically Wall Street, yes, there's a lot of things that...
But you weren't a wolf of... You weren't the Leonardo to Capriccio. You weren't on a yacht and, you know, none of that.
No.
Fantastic.
Yes. So, that's how I ended up in Maine. So, yes, I wanted to do something that gave back in more than just creating jobs. And Pete and Kim Erskine have got the same philosophy and big hearts to boot. And at Mexicali Blues, we've made more than just a little bit of headway in that part of running a small business. We've last year did a lot overseas as well as here in Maine. And this year we have the same game plan. Last year we structured all of that around the earthquakes in Nepal, which were very impactful with a lot of our vendors and relationships with artisans there. And we gave back over 1% of our revenue, and most of it went to that area.
Great. Talk a little bit about Mexicali Blues. How did you first hook up with those guys? And then, if you wouldn't mind, talk for listeners that haven't been to one of your locations, talk a little bit about the number of locations and how you would describe your locations. It's eclectic products, but it's also eclectic environment, and it's just a fun place to walk in. So talk a little bit about what Mexicali Blues is as a business.
All right. Well, physically, we have 6 stores. They're in Newcastle, Raymond, Freeport, Portland, and Bangor. 2 of them are in Portland. That's how I get to the 6. We also have an online presence at MexicaliBlues.com, where you can buy most of the retail offerings that are in store, although there are a lot of unique reasons why you should check us out in store here in Maine.
Right. And on Exchange Street, there's not Exchange, I'm thinking Moulton.
Moulton. Yeah, right at
You're
the bottom.
On both sides of the street.
We are.
Interesting retail strategy. And what was the, retail facing store available? Are you catching people on both sides of the sidewalks, different products? What's the thinking on Moulton Street?
If strategy had been involved, they would have been one store. But unfortunately, downtown Portland, specifically that area in the Old Port, there isn't a lot of retail available, and Most of it's within the historic buildings that are existing. And we more or less grew out of our space. We wanted to offer more. We decided jewelry and clothing would be an easy place to differentiate between the 2 stores that we have there. So on one side of the street, you have jewelry as well as a lot of accessories and home and giftware, and that's a place where the 2 stores overlap. And on the other side of the street, the existing store that's been there the longest, 9 Moulton Street, that store is clothing. It has some jewelry, but it too has gift and home. So they overlap a little bit, but jewelry and clothing, and they definitely each have got a fun, unique feel. So you got to check them both out.
Yeah. Sully, you're a millennial, and I know you love it when I refer to you as our token millennial.
Yes.
You must be a Mexicali Blues fan. You've been to the stores?
I have been to the stores.
And what do you shop for? Because you're fashionable, So what's your Mexicali Blues kind of thing when you're going there?
I have to be honest. I get a little overwhelmed when I go in, and I almost view it more of like a museum of goods from around the world. And I'm more really just interested in where it all comes from and who makes it all. And it's admirable how many different products you guys stock.
Nothing really comes across as coming from a sterile manufacturing environment.
Right.
Everything feels like it's kind of custom. There's a lot of unique stuff. Topher, how would you describe, because a big part of running retail is the kind of the business transaction with what you're offering and customers, but also the ethos of the business, and then kind of the buying philosophy.
Yeah.
And talk about, are you involved with all of that? You must have buyers, and you go to different events. You work with different vendors and wholesalers. So how do you decide what to put into the stores that are not only commercial, consistent with kind of the theme of the stores, but philosophically kind of represent what you want and the owners want for Mexicali Blues?
I'm going to try and pair in some of what I didn't answer from your prior question,
okay,
where I started at Mex. So I started long before Kristen and I moved to Maine as a summer employee. I came and got a job in the Newcastle store as a sales associate, and I loved my experience. It was everything that you said, the inside of our stores purveys or communicates, and that is an experience from around the world. It's something that inspired me to travel. It's something that also inspired me to come back to Maine. And when I did, the way that Pete and Kim and I and our employees all work together is to continue to try and build on that. So it's not just been a spur of the moment or we're going to do this. It's been an evolution from learning along the way, as well as building relationships with artisans and employees. And much of it has happened over decades, which is really neat to watch and to be a part of. So this year, a big part of those 40-plus thousand SKUs that make up the inside of our stores is a piece of our history, as well as a piece of what people want today, and a little bit of both Maine as well as away. So
40,000 SKUs.
Yes, it's a lot to keep track of. But
for listeners that may not be familiar with the terminology, a SKU is typically manufacturer, wholesalers assign a number for a specific product. So that's not just the inventory, that's each individual product.
Right. Every color variant, every size.
Right.
They
yeah.
all have an individual SKU. And it also is something that speaks to how we've each specialized within what we're good at. So for Pete and Kim, they do 100% of the buying. We do have employees that help with the stateside. We've got an unbelievably talented warehouse and inventory manager who helps with the stateside, as well as the management of what goes to stores, and allows Pete and Kim, when they're overseas, to focus on building those relationships that they've had for a long time and trying to come up with new design ideas and new products for the coming seasons.
We have Topher Mallory here. He's CEO of Mexicali Blues and also co-founder of Split Rock Distilling, which is a new business in Maine we'll be talking about in a second. So where does the name and where did Mexicali Blues originate from? I understand you started out as an associate and Pete and Kim started it, but from the history and the mythology of Mexicali Blues, how did it first start?
Well, you've got to have Pete Erskine on the show sometime.
I would love to.
He is going to tell that story with a bit of passion and some firsthand experience. And it was he and a good friend at the time, Eric, who started Mexicali Blues, and the story goes that they were searching for a name. They bounced a bunch of ideas off of friends at college, and Mexicali Blues was the one that resonated. They took their first trips overseas shortly after coming up with the name, and a lot of the merchandise at the time was Grateful Dead oriented. A lot changed over the years, and now the Grateful Dead is certainly a part of our in-store experience, but it's a small percentage of what we sell. The larger product line is really the clothing, the jewelry, the accessories, the home, and the giftware.
Well, one of the questions I had, running a business myself, and I think, every business, has a core competency or a product or service you're selling, but the people who work there really are the contact point with your customers. And I've always thought your people are really interesting. And so how do you select a Mexicali Blues employee? Because when you go into your locations, and again, my daughters and Emily here admittedly probably go in more than I, but I do go in. I love your stores. But how do you pick people that kind of personify the ethos of Mexicali Blues as opposed to just another person working in a retail operation? Because the people fit the theme. And I always thought that's interesting. It's like, it's almost like casting where you have people that personify kind of a cool, hip, laid back. Nobody's high pressuring people. It doesn't feel like you're in a mall, obviously. So it's very authentic in terms of the brand. So how do you figure out the people part of it?
Just smiling cheek to cheek with words like authentic and personality.
Yeah.
That is exactly what we're trying to hire. And it's not an easy task. And it's one that a lot of people are involved in, but we trust our store managers. We trust our team to both find as well as to train and to share the Mexicali Blues that we are. So it starts with great interviews and many of them. It is largely around looking for what you just said, personality, as well as a work ethic that might not be as obvious as it seems. That laid-back component that is a part of Mexicali Blues is also one of our biggest hiring challenges because we are some of the hardest working people in retail, and that is how we've been at it as long as we have. When there aren't customers in the store, it's moving as quick as you can to restock and be attentive to details as well as to break down what just transpired in store and try and learn from it. So It's a big challenge for our store managers, and it's a challenge that they always rise to. I'm very proud of what our team has accomplished over the last couple of years. As we have grown from a couple stores to now six, we've grown a team that is every bit as talented as I would hope.
What are the future projections for Mexicali Blues? Are you looking at other retail locations? Are you developing the online platform more to do, higher mix of online sales? Or what's the future or the near future look like?
The near future is continuing to do what we do well. So we're not looking at a lot of other stores right now. We are looking at developing online more. But we're looking at doing more for our stores that we have. We're looking to do more for the customers that we have and for the vendors that we have. So this summer, we've been doing a lot with what some have coined retailtainment, and it's the idea of bringing something into that retail environment that is more than just coming to buy something. For us, it was using Caleb Erskine, one of the children of Pete and Kim, who has got a yurt company, to set up a yurt in front of each of our locations throughout the summer and put on either a day or a weekend of events that were around that community's activities that would work with our brand. So, for instance, we just wrapped up one out in Raymond, Maine, and there we had yoga, we had some henna, and we had some educational pieces, and they all were in a yurt outside of the store. They were all free, and just a fun kickback to the customers and community that have supported us for so long there. We'll be doing that in these coming weeks. We'll be in Freeport on July 30th. We'll be up in Bangor mid-August with that yurt and with some fun.
For people that may not be familiar about a yurt, why don't you explain what that is? And obviously Emily does because she's hip and she's a millennial, right?
I'm also a skier and I see them all over the place now.
Right. So what is that?
All right, I'm going to invite another person to your show. Caleb Perfect. Erskine is a great creator and young entrepreneur, and he has created a company, Living Intent, and what they're doing is creating affordable, small, circular shelters that are put up in probably 30 minutes to an hour and can withstand four seasons. So it's an old design. It is very unique and identifiable if you've seen one. Just by that they are circular.
Wow.
The ones we're using are about 16 feet in diameter, and we've had yoga or meditation sessions of 15 to 30 people in them. So they're also very accommodating for as light and compact and movable as they are. They also offer a huge space that's protected from the elements.
I need to start into yoga. Topher, do you practice yoga? Are you down with the yoga thing?
I don't practice a lot of yoga.
My wife is like, she does hot yoga. She does group yoga. It seems like it's a thing. Is it a thing? How about you, Sully?
It is a thing. We do it here every week.
We offer yoga here for our employees. We have a health and wellness center downstairs with equipment and showers. And then on the outside, either we hold it outdoors if the weather is cooperating, or we have a logistics center. And every week, sometimes a dozen employees are out doing yoga. Yeah.
So you got to get in on it.
We don't have the yurt thing. We don't have the circular thing, but, you know, maybe we'll add that.
Well, get some practice here. Come over and hang out with us on July 30th, and you can have some yoga in a yurt outside of Mexicali.
Okay. I will do that. Well, I want to talk about Split Rock Distilling as we move on to that discussion. Anyone interested, if you haven't been to a Mexicali Blues store, you have to. So why don't you go to their website, MexicaliBlues.com, for information on locations. Or they're very active on Facebook / Mexicali Blues. And I'll also say that Topher is one of the more prolific social media participants. So Topher's Twitter is at Topher Mallory, MALLORY. So tell me about Split Rock Distilling.
Well, Matt Page and I joke around a lot in the tasting room that it started something like this. Hey, this whiskey's really good. You want to try making some? And that was 5 or so years ago. And somehow nothing seemed to defeat us. A lot of things set us back as far as timeline goes. But from the federal permit on through to actually making a product, it's just been one continuous learning experience. And I had plenty at Mexicali Blues, but I also had the unbelievable support of Pete and Kim, who believed in my ability to balance multiple things. And here we are 5 years later with another brand. And Matt and I have worked tirelessly to not just create another distillery, but to create Maine's first organic distilling operation. We didn't want to come to market quickly. We wanted to come to market with a couple products, and we wanted to have something that was handcrafted. A lot of people talk about grain to glass. I was listening to one of your past interviews with Cold River, and they were talking about ground to glass.
Right.
And I don't know as though we're trying to recoin that phrase, but we've tried to add to what we do by, one, being organic and certified through MOFCA, but also adding either ground to glass or grain to glass, adding a NBAT component. So 100% of our spent mash and 100% of our waste is being reused, whether it's watering our lawn, feeding organic cattle or pigs, or even running our lawnmower. We use every bit of our byproduct, and the spirits that we've created are ranging from a vodka to a whiskey currently, but we have gin in R&D, and we have a rum slated for next summer.
So when you say R&D, is that you and Matt sitting around testing something out and going, this tastes good, or is there a technical laboratory component to R&D when you're making spirits and distilling?
I would like to think we've taken a scientific approach, so there is certainly some bit of laboratory, but the only people in that lab are Matt and I. We have not yet brought on our first employee, so everything you see before you is part Matt, part I, and what we have joked around a lot about is that, you know, Matt makes a mean box, and I can put on a label like it's no one's business. We quite literally do everything. We lift the grain into the mash tun in the morning, we ferment, we distill, we apply labels, we make the boxes that are the cases that leave the loading dock. We've branded and marketed on our own. We've had a lot of great help. We have a wall in our tasting room that we call our wall of blood, sweat, and tears. And as you complimented our packaging,
yeah,
I will compliment my mother-in-law, Kathy Lauderell, who worked in a label business for a long time, and she's one of the many people that have had a hand in helping us. So we've had this unbelievable community behind us from the get-go, and they've each done things that have shaped the brand that we are.
Where did the name Split Rock come from?
We wanted something archival. We wanted something that would resonate with a mainer, but also not be our Achilles heel if we wanted to be in multiple states. We wanted something that could grow with us. And Split Rock was, I don't know what name, it was probably thousands of names in. We bounced them off a focus group of friends and family and some marketing folks that we really respected and were glad that stuck through all our bad ideas, which included crazy things like putting our middle names together. My middle name's Hollingsworth, so that gives you an idea of how bad the bottom was. But Split Rock, recently a good friend said, a really ironic name for us to have ended up with, because we wanted something that had its own story to tell. And we first stumbled into it, someone recommended it, and it happened that Split Rock Road is a dirt road that Matt and I traveled while we were working on the brand before we had a building. It's the shortest way between our two homes, and that's...
Wow.
That's
a great story.
Yeah,
I mean, well, that adds part of the mythology. It's not just a name that's you know, clever or meets kind of the phonetics or the balance, but it is literally and figuratively the thing that brought you guys together working on this. We have Topher Mallory here. He's well known in the community as the CEO of Mexicali Blues and most recently one of the co-founders and owners of Split Rock Distilling. So you brought in six bottles, six products. Four of them are vodka-based, which I want to talk to kind of as a group, and then also a bourbon. And I don't know if I've ever seen white whiskey. So, you know, typically whiskey is distilled or fermented in a barrel, typically oak barrels, and there's something about the oak and the tannin that flavors and colors it. So go through one by one is kind of how you selected these products and how these are indigenous now to Maine in terms of either raw ingredients that you use, and then talk about what makes a distilled spirit organic and why other alcohol products, by definition, aren't organic.
Well, we're certified organic. MOFCA is the agency here in Maine that looks over and makes sure that we are. And they also have been a great business partner for us. We've been fixated on bringing our business as close to our community as we can. And they're continuously helping us with grain providers that are closer to home. I'll use our vodkas as a great starting point. So our horseradish and our blueberry are both, the horseradish is 100% Maine horseradish from Snake River.
I love everything you have here. The one question I had was there a compelling market demand for horseradish vodka? Or is it just a unique, quirky, do you and your partner Matt really love horseradish and you thought, we need to get us some horseradish vodka?
I imagine it goes good in a Bloody Mary. That's the only thing that comes to mind for a horseradish vodka, though.
I'd love to tell you I was creative enough to come up with this on our own, but we were on a friend's boat, and they do charters within our river, and the Damariscotta River is synonymous with oysters. And she said, you've got to do a horseradish vodka to accompany the Damariscotta River oyster, and it would be, you know, neat in an oyster shooter. It would be wonderful if it was sippable. So that was the original motivation. And what we ended up with was a line that in our mind is built around neat drinking. Matt and I were passionate about whiskey, specifically bourbon. And when we started down this road, the first thing that we thought would be important to have as a driving characteristic of our brand was neat drinking. I know that vodka for most is not something that is their go-to for a sippable beverage.
As opposed to mixing or as opposed to water, neat drinking, also straight drinking where it's tasty enough and it has enough characteristics that you can just, you know, have a glass of bourbon or vodka.
And that's how for the vodka line we picked corn, because corn we were able to impart a little bit of flavor, although that's not what vodka is usually by definition, and you distill it to a point where there's very little opportunity to impart some flavor. We wanted to do something different. It was also for us a big part of organic. There wasn't somebody doing this in Maine, and we wanted to try something different. So if I'm going to answer your first question and just go quickly down these products, the vodka is 100% corn. It's gluten-free. It is the base of the next two products we're looking at. So we'll go fruits and then roots on you here. We have a Maine organic blueberry vodka. It's 100% organic. All these are. The blueberries are from Maine. They're from right down the road from us. They're field harvested blueberries. It is not a flavored product. These are true infusions, meaning that we are quite literally putting blueberries, not extract, not anything but blueberries into our vodka. So it's a very subtle flavor. It's the essence of blueberries. Blueberries have a lot of water to them. And when we started tasting it, we really liked it. We thought in the mixology world, it might be neat. Bartenders wouldn't be competing against extra sugars or compounded flavoring. And we also decided we'd leave that beautiful bluish purple haze in. We filter out with micron filters all of the particulate, so to speak. And the vodka that we start with is chill filtered, and we use all of the right carbon filters to make a very pure and refined vodka. But we left the blueberry color in there because we wanted to tell that story of this is quite literally our vodka and Maine blueberries. Nothing else in there. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for the horseradish. We're big on no secrets. Here's our secret recipe. Literally horseradish, organically grown here in Maine. We put quite a lot of it in there, and it is soaking in our vodka for not all that long. Horseradish is pretty potent stuff. So we stop that infusion very quickly, and we leave it at a place where you can sip it neat, and it has some nice earthy notes, but it also brings enough heat to marry in with that Bloody Mary perfectly. We also are offering 150 proof vodka, which I would not recommend for the sippable side of things, but it offers people the ability, if they want to go home,
150
proof. Yes. So or, no, 150 proof. So that,
which is 75% correct. Alcohol, pure alcohol.
Yes. So that's if you want to go home and try your own infusion. So that,
or you can power a jet airplane, I believe. I believe you're almost at the combustion point. Wow.
You could probably run your lawnmower with it. It would be an expensive and sad way to run your lawnmower, but you could. Why we did this was so that if you want to go home and try your hand at some of the things we're doing, you can literally go home and make, if you want to make ginger vodka, you could put ginger in this, let it sit for a matter of a day or a week or what you thought was right, and then mix it with water 1-to-1, and you'd end up with roughly 80 proof vodka. I stress the mixing it 1-to-1 with water so that you have something that's sippable, because again, that's what our brand is about. And I know I've been pretty verbose here, and I haven't even gotten to the whiskeys. So
wow, let's get to the whiskeys here. You've got white whiskey and then organic bourbon whiskey.
All right. Both of these are, well, I'll start with the white whiskey because that's the base of the bourbon. And a big part of our operation is the educational and the experiential side of it. When you come into our distillery, you look through a wall of glass like I'm looking through to see the soundboard, yep. And you see everything behind the scenes. And it is reminiscent of this room. You can look through the glass in our distillery. You can see the organic grain. You can see the mash tun. You can see the people behind the scenes. And when we thought about products, we developed them the same way. So the white whiskey, that's a little window behind the scenes. You talked about barrel aging and what that means. If you want to taste what goes into the barrel, or maybe you want to go home and try your hand at maybe just a sliver of oak, which you can just harvest from an oak tree and let it dry and maybe scorch it with a flame so that you get some of those wood sugars out and a little bit of that caramelization and other things that you probably think of when you think of bourbon, you can do that. You can be experimental, or you could mix a cocktail with it. You said Bloody Marys with our horseradish vodka. Another great cocktail is, instead of vodka in a Bloody Mary, is to put white whiskey if you're a whiskey drinker and want a little bit different flavor profile. Our bourbon is a 4-grain bourbon. Both of these whiskey products are 100% organic. Are
some products from other distillers not organic? I mean, I thought by nature, alcohol coming from grains. What part of the process or competing brands would not be organic, just for the listeners to kind of clarify what's organic and not when it comes to alcohol products?
There is not another certified organic distillery in Maine currently, and it doesn't mean that what we're doing is better than any other distiller. It's just another version of what other distilleries are doing. And what that version is that when we buy our grains, they are food-grade organic grains. So just like going to the supermarket and buying an organic flour versus buying a regular flour, we are always buying the organic version. And that means that no pesticides, herbicides, there's a whole host of other things that are not allowed within the organic certification.
GMO products?
Exactly. So these are all non-GMO. We think that
I'm pretty anti-GMO too, except the seedless watermelon. I think the seed. You got to draw a line somewhere, but
yeah. I am.
Topher, are you a purist? Do you do the seedless watermelon, or do you protest?
Not a huge watermelon person, and I like them a lot, though. So I shouldn't say not. It's just not around me a lot. So
gotcha.
I don't you discriminate.
You haven't
I'm okay
taken a political
seeds,
position
or, no,
or the seeds. Gotcha. By the way, we have Topher Mallory here. He's CEO of Mexicali Blues and also one of the co-founders and owners of a new distilling operation. Talk a little bit about Newcastle, how you guys ended up there, and then talk about the tasting room and the distillery, because that it appears that not only have you created a product line, but you're also created an experience which these, whether it's in microbrews or in other distilled products, it feels like it's really exploded here in Maine in the last 10 years. So talk about the tasting room and distillery and why you chose to be in Newcastle and what, you know, people could experience if they go to the website and go to the tasting room.
They can experience almost anything they want to if they come to the tasting room. We have tried to make it so that you can try products, you can buy products, but if you want to go behind the scenes, if you really want to see what we're doing, you can ask any question you want to, and we will do our best to answer. And if we don't know the answer, we'll try and find it. But we want to show people what's in their food, or in this case, in their alcohol. We have the grains on site. We have the relationships with the farmers that are using our waste, our mash, after we've taken the alcohol out of it. We have them represented on site. We have a lot of our history there. The building really is a testament to the journey Matt and I have been on over the last couple of years creating this. And Newcastle, well, it was home to both of us. It was a place that we could find great water, a fun older barn. And those were things that were important to our organic brand. We obviously needed a great canvas. And for us, that canvas is the Damariscotta River watershed and the Pemaquid watershed and the area we are. That aquifer has got very clean, tasty water. And Newcastle, it's already home to both of us. So it was a logical pick with very little commute. And we found a location out on Route 1, which was also nice. My retail background certainly has taught me that the old saying, location, location,
right,
location, is important. So Route 1 was a great place where we knew we would see a lot of traffic and would have that built in. And that's also something that I want to talk to with these bottles I brought today. This is all batch one. You'll notice every single one of these is individually numbered. It is also got its batch on it. And we wanted to come to market at a point when we had a few products, but we didn't have any batch two yet. We wanted to get consumer feedback. And that, too, is part of Newcastle. It's got a great community, very supportive, very honest. Mainers certainly don't hold anything back. And we wanted to hear what people thought. Like, is horseradish vodka a good idea, or is that just crazy talk? And so far, we've heard, you know, we're not converting people that don't like horseradish. But anyone that likes horseradish, anyone that has had seafood with horseradish on it, love it. And the blueberry, it being simple and the essence of blueberry without flavorings, has been really well received. The vodkas are a lot of fun all into themselves at offering that open canvas, but the whiskeys being our passion, I think we've done a good job there as well. But hearing from consumers, that's been a big part of Newcastle, and it's not let us down. We've gotten some great feedback.
So how often is the tasting room and distillery open? You're up at Newcastle, and by the way, listeners can go to www.splitrockdistilling.com. They're on Facebook, Twitter, Split Rock Maine, Instagram, Split Rock Distilling. So you can go to the website. I'm sure you have hours, and the location is 16 Osprey Point Road. But how often is it open for people that may be interested in going up and doing a tour and a tasting?
We opened 15 days ago.
Wow.
We hoped to be open for at least 4 days a week. That was our hope. So after the first 4 days, I believe we took a little bit of 1 day off, and we have been open 7 days a week since, and we will continue to be open 7 days a week. Our hours will always be updated on Google, Facebook, as well as our website. Currently, it is 12 to 6, Monday through Thursday, and Friday through Sunday, 12 to 7. And the tasting room has impromptu tours currently, but we will start scheduling those soon. So keep an eye peeled for Facebook events or on our website if you want a more in-depth look where you can actually go right behind the scenes and walk around the distillery and learn firsthand from Matt and I what we're up to.
So we have Topher Mallory here in the studio. You've been here in Maine for over a decade, and you've seen from your retail business as CEO of Mexicali Blues, but in just kind of day-to-day, how both in the beer category of microbrew, you know, Bissell Brothers were in here a few months ago, and they're doing some really interesting things, to Cold River and other distillers, and even boutique coffee shops, which are obviously non-alcohol-based, but it's kind of a similar ethos of Maine. It appears as a huge market for kind of homegrown, authentic, artisan-type products, artisan coffee, artisan beer, artisan spirits. Why has this exploded? And I've been joking over the last few months that pretty soon every street will have its own brewing company in, because it feels like they're popping up everywhere. But what do you account for the demand? Obviously, people are interested. They're going to the tasting room. They're buying products. But how has this happened? And do you think there's anything special about Maine that makes it a fertile environment to do these types of businesses?
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest things for us at Mexicali, as well as at Split Rock, has been the business community. And at Split Rock, I have nothing but, you know, just the utmost respect for folks like Bissell Brothers, for Maine Distilling, and Luke Davidson, and Ned over at New England Distilling, Cold River. I could go on and on.
Allagash started a big of it.
Absolutely.
Rob Todd is a really
Shipyard,
great guy.
Fred Forsley, yeah. Down the street from us. It's just been this wonderful partnership, which isn't something that you commonly see amongst what most would discern as competitors. And it's just not that way in Maine. So that's one part of the Maine business community. But I want to really speak to the Maine consumer and the Maine community, because I think that I wish this was my quote. It's out of a Greg Brown song. And I think he's talking about Michigan actually in it. But he says that he loved the Upper Peninsula in Michigan because you still needed community there. And that was a big catalyst for my wife and I to move to Maine. We wanted to move to a place where you still had intentional community, or you still needed community. And that is why craft is working so well in Maine, in my opinion, is that people still need one another. They still want to support one another, and they want to know what's in their food. They want to know what's in their beer, what's in their whiskey. They want to know what's in their radio show. I love that I'm looking across at a person and we're not doing this through Skype, and that I'm right in a studio, and this isn't some mic'd up MacBook in front of me. You guys have got a soundboard and we're hanging out together. That's why. It's not because of, you know, people often talk about different demographics, and, you know, millennials get a lot of heat for certain things and they get credit for a lot of things. I don't think that craft is synonymous with one demographic. I think as a society, we're starting to want to know more. Like you said, GMOs, non-GMOs, people want to know more about what's in there, and they don't want it to be a smoke and mirrors with something unnatural behind a natural product. So,
in our last couple of minutes before we have to go, we have Topher Mallory here, CEO of Mexicali Blues and co-founder and co-owner of Split Rock Distilling. We've talked about Mexicali Blues as a brand and as a retail operation, and it's fascinating, Split Rock, your products and brands. But talk about Maine as a business environment, as a CEO, because I think it's great what you've done. I think both enterprises, Mexicali and Split Rock, I think are really interesting. They're based on passion. They're clearly from talking to you, and when you join Pete and Kim, who are the founders and owners of Mexicali, those businesses go beyond just kind of the intrinsic product elements and really go into people caring, employees caring. That transmits to consumers that feel an empathetic connection, like these people care, so I'm going to care about their products. But at the end of the day, Maine faces some real economic challenges. We have a relatively weak economic engine. Everyone's heard the statistics and understands the reality day in, day out. But you've worked in a couple of businesses and oversee a couple of businesses that by all accounts have been successful, they've been interesting, you've had fun. What do you think about Maine, or what would you say to entrepreneurs either considering coming to Maine or other entrepreneurs here that you've learned about business enterprise and trying to make it work here in Maine?
I'm flattered that you used the word enterprise, so I'm just glowing over here. But I think of myself as a small business, and I think of both of these companies as largely entrepreneurial rather than enterprise. They very much are larger entities now. But when you
work with alcohol, again, without diverting, but you know, you mentioned it briefly. It is an arduous, technical, regulatory landmine of ATF and federal regulations, state regulations. When you're selling alcohol products, the retail, the stamps, the taxation, there's a lot to it, as well as when you're serving any kind of food or consumable, there's all kinds of – and same thing with Mexicali. You know, it looks and feels like these eclectic stores – but there's business, there's payroll, there's inventory. And so I think you have the entrepreneurial spirit and ethos, but they're real businesses doing great work. So, the enterprise thing was a compliment as opposed to, you know, suggesting that you're part of the evil empire of Walmart or you're part of Smirnoff or something like that. But you have an interesting approach to business where it's kind of, it feels like it's a lifestyle infused, not like the horseradish vodka, but it's lifestyle infused for all the people you've met. You know, you've talked about Pete and Kim, who I've never met, but they sound like great people. You talk about Matt, your partner in Split Rock, driving on a road back and forth. I followed your Twitter, and over the last few months, you install a piece of equipment, and you guys are up till midnight, and you're tweeting about it, and some some cold processing piece of equipment just came in, and we're going to spend the next 3 days. It's passionate. But in order for it to continue and to grow, it has to also be rooted in business principles and success. So what about that makes it possible to do it here in Maine from your perspective?
It's, you know, I'll use that piece of equipment at midnight as an example, and I'll bring my wonderfully understanding and loving and amazing wife, who is a huge part of my support system and as well as my inspiration, and my daughter Flynn. So my wife Kristen and Flynn, that night that we were there till midnight, brought dinner to us, and we hung out in the tasting room like it was our living room. And Matt and his wife, Erica, and their daughter, Elodie, did the same. So they have a one-year-old, we have a two-year-old. And that's the lifestyle that Maine affords business and makes this possible. It is not easy, you're right, to compete with the, you know, the regulatory hurdles of the TTB and big companies, whether it's, you know, 100-year-old empires or even new companies that have been spawned by some of these bigger organizations. And for us, it's community, it's family, it's really caring, it's taking it personally in the right way. I don't take, you know, failures personally. I try and learn from them, but I do take each of these products personally. I take my relationships with my employees personally, meaning I really want them to succeed. I want to give them every tool so that the job is fulfilling and the product is something we all believe in, because then we know our consumers are going to believe in it. If we can do it better, we want to do that the next time around.
In our last minute with Topher Mallory, what's on the horizon, either at Split Rock or Mexicali? Are there different products, different companies?
Absolutely.
You're an active participant in both kind of the exported and celebrated entrepreneurial mythology of Maine. So every time there's an entrepreneurial thing or a group thing, I see your name. So you're supportive of other people in the community, and I think that certainly well deserved and warranted. But what's the next thing beyond Mexicali? Split ice cream? Have we thought about ice cream? I have a, you know, we have some great, you know, boutique ice cream places in Beals, but you can never get too much ice cream. What's on the horizon that kind of fits in the trajectory and the theme of what you've done over the last decade or so?
All right. Well, at Mexicali, it's continuing to do what we do. So we're this yurt idea is just the start of, I believe, a much larger experience expanse at MEX. And also doing more with what we did last year and continue to do this year, giving 1% back to not just international, not just Maine, but causes that we really think are near and dear to our brand. And at Split Rock, it's going to be adding some products in. It's going to be continuing down this organic road to maybe some non-alcoholic options. We've started working on taking our used bourbon barrels and filling them with organic maple syrup. So we'll have a non-alcoholic bourbon barrel rested maple syrup for the holiday season. We're working on some other whiskeys so that there might be something similar to the blueberry type idea, not necessarily blueberry, but we're going to try some natural infusions over in the whiskey world. We're going to come out with a rum for next year and possibly a gin in the next couple months. We're targeting this holiday season for our gin. And excitingly for Matt and I is to start hiring employees. We definitely want to find some kindred spirits, some folks that have the excitement we do about craft, and slowly start building a company around what has largely been a passion project.
So finally, where can people find Split Rock other than the tasting room and other than going up to Newcastle, where you are open almost every day? Do you have retail distribution or on-premise distribution? So where can people find the products?
Yeah, we're starting to. We could use your listeners' help. So
perfect.
Our area, Lincoln County, we have great saturation, a lot of restaurants, a lot of people asked for us early and often. So we are within the local area restaurants there and starting to be within some retail locations in Lincoln County. In Freeport, Bow Street has us. In Portland, RSVP has us. But outside of those two locations, there are not too many that currently hold us. Again, we've only been on the market for 15 days. So we'll start in August, probably reaching out. But in the meantime, if you'd like to see an organic, Maine-made craft spirit in your local restaurant, grocery store, or alcohol agency store, please ask for us. We are available in the state warehouse. This being a control state, all of our alcohol goes there first. So your store can order us.
Perfect. Well, I'm really glad we started the interview talking about how I've been familiar with Mexicali because my daughters are, I don't know if you have a CRM system or you track your customers, but I think I've financed a couple of the stores over the last decade because they're definitely heavy users, and I think you do a great job there, and wish you all the best with Split Rock, and would love to have you come back sometime and continue the discussion.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for all of these talks. I've listened to them for a while now, and the people that you've brought in are amazing members of our community and folks that have inspired me in more than one way. So thank you, too, for the work you've done.
Well, thank you. This has been Topher Mallory, CEO of Mexicali Blues. Encourage you to visit their stores, go to their website. And also, he and his partner, Matt, have just launched Split Rock Distilling. And go to their website, which is splitrockdistilling.com. They're active on social media. You have been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM. We'll be back next week.